First of all, I'd like to thank my higher power and the God of my understanding for providing me with the guidance and the strength to get through this day so far clean and sober. This is my first time speaking, so I'm like really nervous up here, so you guys gotta bear with me. The topic of who is an addict is, for me, is really like, is big. And I didn't come to that realization that I was an addict, and I really enjoyed the first speaker, and the things that she said were like, I'm like, man, she's giving my talk. Maybe I don't have to get up here. But, you know, being myself as an addict, I did some of the same things, you know, isolated and being alone, and I thought I had, you know, I had things under control. My self-centeredness and my self-seeking, it was all about me in my addiction. When it came to that realization would have been in rehab. So I went in there, and it's really, I could laugh about it now, but at the time I'm sitting there, we're all sitting in the big building where we have our main meetings, and I told another recovering addict, I was like, you know what, I'm not an addict. I only smoke crack once a year. Okay, so he about died laughing at me and falling on the floor, and I was feeling some type of way about that. I was getting mad. Like it says in the basic text, the way we think about an addict is, you know, needles and the homeless and things like that. And I wasn't any of those. You know, I had my own house. I had custody of my children. I had, you know, I had a family that cared about me and supported me and everything. I didn't think I fit what, the definition of an addict. But coming to realize it is like, the only thing I can say is it brought me to my knees. It literally brought me to my knees. You know, the God of my understanding, he was in my life before, but I chose to shut him out because my way was the best way for me. You know, it was just like my whole world come crashing down, what I thought was right, and my illusions of, I had everything under control went out the window. At that point, I felt very bare. You know, I felt like I'm sitting in the middle of this room with all these people around me, and I felt naked. And, you know, that's when I started opening my mind. And it was really hard realizing that the way I was living was so far off track. Because I really, truly believed in my heart that I was going to die using, you know. It also says in our basic text about, you know, enjoying those highs until it runs out. I never sat and thought about that before. I wasn't looking at the whole thing, the whole picture. But I'm grateful today that that I can see that. This disease, I've come to realize, is a disease of the mind. And it has robbed me physically, emotionally, and spiritually. You know, I really can't, like, tell you when my first time I was when I got high. I was 15 years old. And where I came from, the family I was in, I was a spoiled rotten brat. I got everything I wanted. I was a single child, or an only child. You know, my mom was a single parent. And back then, by any means necessary. I really understand that today. I was manipulating when I was probably 4 or 5 years old. Probably even when she brought me home. You know, I want what I want when I want it. And I thought when I was coming up in that, that was cool. You know, I was getting anything I wanted. I didn't need or want for anything. And, you know, I thought I had a really good life growing up. And when I sit and look back at it now, I didn't have that time with my mom. So I rerouted, and my thinking was really messed up back then. Because I found my happiness in material things, you know, and in money. And that's where the self-seeking and the self-centeredness of this disease took me. It had a hold of me way back then. This is like two people inside of you. You know, in one sense, okay, I got everything under control in my household. I can, you know, I wasn't paying my bills. I ain't even going to say that it was. But I was taking care of my kids, I thought, to the best of my ability. You know? Even something like as simple as feeding the dog. Poor dog went for 3 days without food. You know what I mean? And I thought, in my mind, everything was good. My mom's paying my bills for her place and my place. And I thought that was okay. Just the twisted way of thinking of being an addict is something that when you come to grips with, and now you're back at like at the first step, realizing that you're powerless over this addiction. And I couldn't stay in the day. You know, when I was there and I thought I had things under control, but yet worry and fear come in. You know, the first thing come to mind wasn't about, well, where am I going to get my money to pay my bills? It was, where am I going to get my money to get the next bag or the next, you know, the next high? Who was I going to call? Who was I going to go visit? Man, I should have been worried about what time my kids were going to bed, getting them up from school. It took me also to a place of like the isolation, and I didn't want to be around nobody. I didn't even want to be around my kids, and they lived with me. And in my mind, I was okay at the time. And I've also realized today that I cannot take any mind or mood altering substances. And it was a big step for me. Like, because if I didn't have drugs, anything over the counter would do that I could get my hands on. And the first time I went to the doctor after coming out of the rehab, it seemed like it was so easy, and like I wasn't even speaking out of my own mouth. And I told him, look, what are you allergic to? Are you allergic to anything? Yes, I'm allergic to narcotics. I am an addict. And right then, I thought to myself, man, you need to slap yourself in the head for that. What'd you do that for? My thing was, you know, the manipulation of even getting the prescribed drugs. You know, and that was okay. You know, and that's where I can see that the progression of this disease, it doesn't show its full face right away. It took me years. It babied me, you know, made me think I was happy, things under control, you know, and that I was dealing with life on life's terms. You know, how I was dealing with life on life's terms was, if I didn't have a solution to it right then and there, I wasn't dealing with it. And I looked, whenever I stopped using drugs, you know, I thought, like she said, I thought I had everything, you know, everything would just cure itself. You know, that was my problem when it came to that realization, and I wanted to stop so bad. I couldn't figure out why I couldn't. Okay, this is it. I'm not going to do this in the morning. Get up in the morning. What am I doing? The same thing. I was doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Because the disease of addiction was telling me that, you know, you got one more in you. One more time, one more time, one more time. Well, that one more time kept going over and over and over again. You know, where's this going to stop? I felt myself spiraling out of control. And, you know, and I still didn't think I was an addict at the time. And now that I'm on the other side of it and I'm clean, and clean for some time now, I can look that it wasn't the using. It wasn't the drugs. It wasn't how much I used or who I, you know. It was the fact that I was an addict from a very early age. And I was comfortable with that. You know, and I also nurtured my disease of addiction and allowed myself to stay in that place because it was familiar. You know, I always look for the easy way out because when things come up, I didn't want to deal with it. If I could, I would. But it was all self-centered, motives. And when I, you know, would be around my family and you know, you have a problem and this, no, I didn't. You know, you justify, rationalize the excuses, you know. I love wearing this shirt because there's absolutely no excuse in this world for my actions because I have choices today. And I chose to arrest this disease of addiction and came to the understanding that it's not going to go away. It's hiding and waiting for me to be vulnerable, to put my literature down, put my steps down. Don't call that sponsor. Don't fellowship. Don't be with the women in the program. Okay? If I start eliminating that kind of stuff, I'm in deep trouble. You know? Because I can't handle it. That way of life was out of control. And it's not a way I want to live today. I don't want to live that way for myself, for my children. I don't want to sit and isolate myself and feel like a failure. But yet I'm okay. But I feel like a failure. Nobody wants me. You know, stay stuck in that self-pity and the denial. Oh, my Lord. After I got out of rehab and when I got to tell you this, I had a counselor in this halfway house, and she really upset me because I'm just now coming to grips with realizing that I was an addict. I don't want to hear any more mess from them. Just let me focus on something, you know? And I go in there, and everything that I tried to talk to her about or express to her, she was like, "You're lying. You're lying. You're like, you're in denial. You're in denial. I was like, oh, my goodness. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to say, you know? Denial is a really nasty thing, and, you know, I look back, and I still... She was right. No, there was no excuse for that. She was right. I still wanted to live the lifestyle, but I didn't want the drugs in it. And being an addict, look, I can speak for myself only by saying that there's no way that I can ever do that. You know, the lifestyle and the things, it's all this disease, it talks to me in this. The lifestyle just not going to cut it because everything just comes right in behind it. Like a line of marching ants. You know, you think you can hang around with the same people, be in the same places, do, you know, go and do the same things. You know, and when I was first coming into the rooms, I thought, well, you know, maybe I can hang out with the same people. I'll be the designated driver. Okay. Thank God I didn't try it. Okay. Because after that, it was like a month after that, the drug dreams were coming. The bars, the parking lots as I was driving by was looking nice. Like my car just wanted to go that way. And it's just, you know, the lifestyle of people that's of partying and things like that. And it's really difficult sometimes, you know, we got to change people, places, and things. And it was... Another thing that was hard was, you know, when you have family reunions or you have family members that use and they suggest to you, maybe you shouldn't go to that family reunion. That was one suggestion that I kind of took a little too lightly. You know, and I went, and then when I got there, I just wanted to leave because my guts were just in knots. My disease was telling me, hang out with these people. They love you. They're your family. And I was offered a beer. And at that point, I froze. You know, my disease was telling me, it's okay. Did my disease send that person in front of me? It's testing me. I can't. Look, I can't even be here. And yes, they might love me, but they don't understand, you know? It's really frustrating. Sometimes your family, my family in particular, can see the changes that I made. And a lot of these changes have come by themselves. I didn't have to, you know, some of them just came. And I'm grateful and thankful for that. And life on life's terms, not dealing with it before, you know, I look at every little thing. I'm a perfectionist, so when I read a chapter, I'm reading over who is an addict. And so I just want to just put some things that I want to touch on right on this paper. If I'd have kept going, I probably would have filled up half this notebook or wrote the whole chapter in here. Because my recovery today means the world to me. Because the cunning, baffling, and powerful disease of addiction is waiting in the shadows, waiting for me to mess up. It also read in the basic text, I got to keep going back to this to keep me on focus here, on addiction and the addict. The disease is what makes us addicts. And it's not how much we use, who we use with, but our reactions to them. And the reactions to drugs, for me, is everything that I've already mentioned that puts yourself in a place where you are all alone. And nobody want to be around you. You don't want to be around nobody else. It's the fear, the self-pity. I just, the list goes on and on of the things that are normal for us to feel those feelings. But if I stay stuck in it and I don't want to take action and have the willingness without reservation to stand up against this disease and keep it back. I want to move forward a step away from that drug, not a step toward that drug in the opposite direction. We also forgot how to work, play. You know, look, I forgot how to play with my kids. This addiction, it robbed me of so many things. And my kids, look, it's kind of hard to admit this, but you know what? It's reality. I made my kids go outside and I would lock the door. It's my insanity. Just so I could get high. And then when I was high, I didn't want to deal with it. I would stay in bed all day. Wasn't up taking care of them, feeding them, nurturing them. Sometimes that stuff's hard to come to grips with. Really hard. I have a 12-year-old son. I got three boys, 12, 10, and 5. And my 12-year-old, maybe I shouldn't have brought this up. But it keeps it real for me, and it keeps me to where I remember to play that tape back to where I was, where I don't want to go back to. And I know he's told me he doesn't understand. And I hear things like, you know, when he's angry, and the poor boy doesn't know how to vent it or how to, he comes out with hurtful stuff, and he just, you know, you might as well go back on drugs. You're acting the same way you did then. At the time, that's like a dagger going through my heart. I feel like I've worked really hard at keeping this disease away from me. And I had to sit him down and explaining this, the whole addiction thing. And my 10-year-old, God bless him, He thinks that we go to meetings to talk about being on drugs. I didn't really know what to say to him at the time, but I tried to explain that that's not what we do. And you know, my sponsor had suggested that I sit down with my 12-year-old and try to explain to him about what's going on and why I need these meetings. I have my son, not only my son, but my mom. She doesn't understand this stuff either, and I can't expect her to. I try to live my life by example. But when they're just not getting it, I try, sometimes beating my head up against the wall, trying to explain how powerful this thing is. You know, I'm grateful to be an addict today. Because my mind, I can think about things on a deep level. Pick things apart, you know. But explaining to them was, you know, if I had cancer and I had to go for treatment every day or every other day, would you still be treating me like this? Would you still be acting this way or thinking this way? And he looked at me and almost wanted to cry, and he said no. And I chose to get involved, like, you know, to really keep it away. I became addicted to NA. You know, I started out just going to meetings and meeting people. I wanted to get involved. And I got involved and I went to an area service meeting. I think it was my second area service meeting as, you know, as a brand new GSR going up here, not knowing what to do. I'm sitting there thinking, all right. You know, and the first time around, it was funny because I'm thinking, man, this place is a zoo. A bunch of addicts trying to figure out what's going to happen, what's going to go on. But I've come to realize the importance of the area service. And to keep this program available to people that may not realize that they're addicts yet. People that are suffering, that want a new way of life, a new way to live, that are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And that second meeting, somebody nominated me for the area secretary. And I didn't know what to say. I was in a strange place as it was, being there, you know, for the second time. But I said, okay. And it's been a blessing to me. I enjoy making sure that the minutes are out there, that they're available. And just the service work involved with it, and the PI, just everything that helps keep this disease back for farther and farther. Like I said, the whole addiction is just such a wide range of so many different things. And being an addict and the addiction, the disease, is scary sometimes. When I look back and see some of the things that I did that I probably would not have done being clean. I know I wouldn't have done it clean. I have been around, like, the testing. Because my disease is alive and well. And it doesn't like whenever I stand up here and tell on it. It's really hating me right now. And that's cool. I'm okay with that. Because I don't like it either. I just know I'd like to share a little bit of hope. The hope that this thing's possible. That if you stick and stay, give it a chance, be open-minded and willing to receive the information. That willingness to change, sometimes that is really, really hard. Really hard. But once I left my guard down, I said, okay, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can do this. You know, and the light and the spirit that was in those rooms and the meetings when I first started coming around, I was okay when I walked in those rooms. It was people that did the same stuff I did, people I could relate to, had the same disease, the same powerful disease that I had. And that was great. I loved it. But since I've been in the program, I get stronger as I grow, as I accept the change, and I become reconnected with that higher power and get that conscious contact on a daily basis. And in my case, it's more than a couple times a day. In the morning and at night, everywhere in between, no matter where I'm at, you know. And the foxhole prayers I used to say, I know he was sitting there laughing at me. God, of my understanding, he's got a sense of humor. You know, and it's so good just to feel like I'm embraced by that and feel okay with just being me and being who I am. And you know what? Being alone for me took on a whole new definition. I'm okay being by myself. When I look in that mirror, the person that I see looking back at me is a sick-minded addict, but I love myself today. And I know that this way of life, because I cannot claim ignorance anymore, I do not want to go back to that way of life in active addiction. I don't pray that on anybody. I don't even pray that on my worst enemy. It's truly just too powerful, and it kills people. This disease is not prejudiced. It's no man, woman, race, color, you know, sex, creed, whatever. It doesn't care. Anybody can be an addict. And I sit back and I look at some people like my mom, and you know, she doesn't do drugs or drink or anything like that, but I seriously really tell her she needs a program. Because the program has brought me so much serenity and being okay, and I can live in today. Tomorrow's not here yet. I don't got to worry about what I'm going to do tomorrow, where I'm going to go tomorrow, you know. When's the money coming? It'll be here. I've got to share this because this was a wonderful experience. This is what has happened over the course of, you know, the last year or so. And I was deeply rewarded. I was driving down the highway and I had someone with me and we were talking, and I don't even know how the conversation got started, but I was starting to four-step. I was starting to four-step this person. It was all coming out. And I almost had to stop myself and be like, man, you should be talking to your sponsor about this, not this person. But I kept going. It was an uncontrollable, it was a release of some of the things that were trying to keep me and hold me down, to not let me move forward. And I honestly had to pull off the side of the road. I felt like there was a balloon inside of me just inflating. Never experienced this before in my life. And that feeling was a calming, a lot of serenity. I had to pull off the side of the road because I wasn't driving nowhere. And I don't remember driving the next 10 or 15 miles down the road. You know, and then coming to realize that spiritual experience, my dad has passed, it'll be 2 years this December, I got some confirmation, you know, and it just felt like, I'm a visual person, and I had these visions of talking with my dad while I'm driving, and it felt like he was just holding my shoulders, like he was standing behind me, just embracing me. And it was, that was a wonderful feeling. And I can guarantee you, if I was still doing the same ugly stuff that I was doing 2 years ago, that was so far from me. Like, I would have never been able to experience that. And to share that spiritual awakening with people is, you know, well, we're told we can only keep what we have by giving it away. And everybody is capable of getting this program. It's simple. Sometimes I make it real hard and difficult by overanalyzing stuff and really having that, not having that desire to change. But I always got to remember to play the tape. When I get into a difficult situation or something I don't have the answer to, don't just let it go, you know? Like, I have a family member too, my aunt, and she's, I love her to death. She was like my mom when I was growing up, when my mom wasn't there a lot of the time. And she's still actively using the same drug of choice that I used with her. And I got to keep playing that tape. And it's really hard to kind of let go of her. I just got to keep my distance and keep my recovery first. Being an addict and being that disease is so powerful and waiting for me, my recovery has got to come first in my life. If I think for a minute, and I've been told by quote-unquote normal people, my family in particular, when I don't put my kids first, I'm being selfish and self-centered. They have no idea how selfish and self-centered I was and the way I'm trying to change that. And my kids, you know, I want them to come first in my life, but the only way I can do that is by keeping my recovery first. Because if I don't have my recovery, I don't have anything. I'm going to lose it all over again. You know, I lost my house, lost my kids. I don't want to lose that again. I have come too far. And it hurts like hell to see somebody that you get close to coming into the program that gets, you know, a small significant amount of clean time and to go back out. It's very frustrating, you know, and that for me is an example that I was always hard-headed, had to learn by my own stuff. Let me fall on my face and then I'll learn my lesson. But something else that I've come to change in my life and learn how to do is learn from other people's mistakes. Because when I hear them come back in, it is no better out there. It is no better. You know, and it's evidence. I receive evidence every single day, you know, as long as I keep my life on the right road. But when I start veering off these side roads and think I want to go walking through the woods or something, I'm in trouble. You know, I try to the best of my ability, and I'm not perfect, to keep my spiritual principles intact and practice them in all my affairs, in whatever I do, whatever comes my way, because it's very important to me. The change that I want in my life is to rekindle those relationships with my family, my kids, you know, because the relationship that I've been rekindling with myself is awesome. I have it in me to do that, you know, but I have to stay on the road. And I guess just the hope and the strength of, you know, the program working and things like that. That's enough for me. Seeing it around me. You know, coming to these spiritual retreats and seeing everybody sitting here is just like me. And it's an awesome feeling, you know, to know that I could talk to probably any one of you. And somewhere along the line, we've both done some similar stuff. Or I can learn something from that person of how to grow and keep moving forward and move away from the disease and away from the drugs. But I am definitely an addict, and I cannot use just a little bit. I can't take just one. Because I go overboard. Obsessive and compulsive. So if I do that one, I'm off to the races. It's all over from there. So I'm very grateful that I was asked or honored to speak. This is my first time speaking. I've gave my lead before, but this really kind of gave me a little bit of more in depth of being an addict and what this addiction can do to me and how recovery and the program of Narcotics Anonymous has pulled me up out of that and has helped make me a better person. I'm just very grateful and thankful to all the people I have in my life, and I'm looking forward to meeting some new addicts. Change it up a little bit. I don't know, I hope everybody enjoys the retreat this weekend. I know I'm going to do to the best of my ability. That's all I got.